42. The fog condensed on the grey metal of the bridge, so the footplates were slippery underfoot. It soaked into the overcoats of the men huddled against the rail, and it dewed in minute pearls on the eyebrows and the beard of Capitaine Source Otto von Kleiner. It gave him an air of derring-do, the reckless look of a scholarly pirate. Every few seconds, Lieutenant Killer glanced anxiously at his captain, wondering when the order to turn would come. He hated this business of creeping inshore in the fog, with a flood tide pushing them towards a hostile coast. "Stop all engines," said von Kleiner, and Killer repeated the order to the helm with alacrity. The muted throbbing died beneath their feet, and afterwards the fog-blanketed air was heavy with a sepulchral hush. "Ask masthead what he makes of the land," von Kleiner spoke without turning his head, and after a pause Killer reported back, "Masthead is in the fog. No visibility." He paused. "Foredeck reports 50 fathoms shoaling rapidly." And von Kleiner nodded. The sounding tended to confirm his estimate that they were sitting 5 miles off the breakwater of Durban Harbour. When the morning wind swept the fog aside, he hoped to see the low coastal hills of Natal ahead of him, terraced with gardens and whitewashed buildings, but most of all, he hoped to see at least 6 British merchantmen anchored off the beach, waiting their turn to enter the congested harbour, plump and sleepy under the protection of the shore batteries, unaware just how feeble was the protection afforded by 6 obsolete 10-pounders, manned by old men and boys of the militia. German naval intelligence had submitted a very detailed report of the defences and conditions prevailing in Durban. After careful perusal of this report, von Kleiner had decided that he could trade certain betrayal of his exact position to the English for such a rich prize. There was little actual risk involved. One pass across the entrance of the harbour at high speed, a single broadside for each of the anchored merchantmen, and he could be over the horizon again before the shore gunners had loaded their weapons. The risk, of course, was in showing Blücher to the entire population of Durban City, and thereby supplying the Royal Navy with its first accurate sighting since the declaration of war. Within minutes of his first broadside, the British squadrons which were hunting him would be racing in from all directions to block each of his escape routes. He hoped to counter this by swinging away towards the south, down into that watery wilderness of wind and ice below latitude 40 degrees, to the rendezvous with Esther, his supply ship. Then on to Australia or South America as the opportunity arose. He turned to glance at the chronometer above the ship's compass. Sunrise in 3 minutes, then they could expect the morning wind. "Masthead reports the fog dispensing, sir." Von Kleiner aroused himself and looked out into the fog banks. They were moving now, twisting upon themselves in agitation at the warmth of the sun. "All engines slow ahead together," he said. "Masthead," warbled one of the voice pipes in the battery in front of Killer. "Land bearings green 4-0, range 10,000 meters, a big headland." That would be the bluff above Durban, that massive whale-backed mountain that sheltered the harbour. But in the fog, von Kleiner had misjudged his approach. He was twice as far from shore as he had intended. "All engines full ahead together. New course 006. He waited for the order to be relayed to the helm before strolling across to the voice pipes. "Guns, Captain."
"Guns,"
the voice from far away acknowledged. "I will be opening fire with high explosives in about 10 minutes. The target will be a mast merchant shipping on an approximate mark of 300 degrees. Range 5,000 meters. You may fire as soon as you bear."
"Mark 300 degrees. Range 5,000 meters, sir,"
repeated the pipe, and von Kleiner snapped the voice tube cover shut and returned to his original position, facing forward with his hands clasped loosely behind his back. Below him, the gun turrets revolved ponderously, and the long barrels lifted slightly, pointing out into the mist with impassive menace. A burst of dazzling sunshine struck the bridge so fiercely that Killer lifted his hand to shield his eyes, but it was gone instantly as the Blucher dashed into another clammy cold bank of fog. Then, as though they had passed through a curtain onto a brilliantly lit stage, they came out into a gay summer's morning. Behind them, the fog rolled away in a sodden grey wall from horizon to horizon. Ahead rose the green hills of Africa, rimmed with white beach and surf, and speckled with thousands of whiter flecks that were the buildings of Durban town. The scaffolding of the cranes along the harbour wall looked like derelict sets of gallows. Humped on the smooth, green mirror of water between them and the shore lay four ungainly shapes, looking like a troop of basking hippo. The British merchantmen. "Four only," muttered von Kleiner in chagrin. "I had hoped for more." The 40-foot barrels of the 9-inch guns moved restlessly, seeming to sniff for their prey, and the Blucher raced on, lifting a hissing white wave at her bows, vibrating and shuddering to the thrust of her engines as they built up to full speed. "Masthead!" the voice tube beside Killer squawked urgently. "Bridge," said Killer, but the reply was lost in the deafening detonation of the first broadside, the long thunderous roll of heavy gunfire. He jumped involuntarily, taken unawares, and then quickly lifted the binoculars from his chest to train them on the British merchantmen. All attention, every eye on the bridge, was concentrated ahead, waiting for the fall of shot upon the doomed vessels. In the comparative silence that followed the bellow of the broadside, a shriek from the masthead voice pipe carried clearly. "Warships! Enemy warships dead astern!" "Starboard 10," von Kleiner raised his voice a little louder than was his wont, and still under full power, Blucher swerved away from the land, leaning out from the turn, with her wake curved like an ostrich plume on the surface of the sea behind her, and ran for the shelter of the fog banks, leaving the rich prize of cargo ships unscathed. On her bridge, von Kleiner and his officers were staring aft, the merchantmen forgotten as they searched for this new threat. "Two warships!" the masthead lookout was elaborating his sighting report. "A destroyer and a cruiser, bearing 90 degrees, range 5070, destroyer leading." In the spherical field of von Kleiner's binoculars, the neat little triangle of the leading destroyer's superstructure popped up above the horizon. The cruiser was not yet in sight from the bridge. "If they'd been an hour later," lamented Killer, "we'd have finished the business and..." "What does masthead see of the cruiser?" von Kleiner interrupted him immediately. He had no time to mourn this chance of fate. His only concern was to evaluate the force that was pursuing him, and then make the decision whether to run or to turn back and engage them immediately. "Cruiser is a medium 6 or 9 inch, either O-class or an R. She's 4 miles behind her escort, both ships still out of range." The destroyer was of no consequence. He could run down on her and blast her into a burning wreck before her feeble little 4.7-inch guns were able to drop a shell within a mile of Blucher, but the cruiser was another matter entirely. To tackle her, Blucher would be engaging with her own class. Victory would only be won after a severe mauling, and she was 6,000 miles from the nearest friendly port, where she could effect major repairs. There was a further consideration. These two British ships might be the vanguard of a battle squadron. If he turned now and challenged action, engaged the cruiser in a single-ship action, he might suddenly find himself pitted against imponderable odds. There could very well be another cruiser, or two, or three, even a battleship below the southern horizon. His duty and his orders dictated instant flight, avoiding action and so prolonging Blücher's fighting life. "Enemy are streaming their colours, sir," Killer reported. Von Kleiner lifted his binoculars again. At the destroyer's masthead flew the tiny spots of white and red. And this time he must leave the challenge to combat unanswered. "Very well," he said, and turned away to his stool in the corner of the bridge. He slumped into it and hunched his shoulders in thought. There were many interesting problems to occupy him, not least of them was how long he could run at full speed towards the north while his boilers devoured coal ravenously, and each minute widened the gap between Blücher and Esther. He swiveled his stool and looked back over his stern. The destroyer was visible to the unaided eye now, and von Kleiner frowned at it in irritation. She would yap at his heels like a terrier, clinging to him and shouting his course and speed across the ether to the hungry British squadrons that must even now be closing with him from every direction. For days now he could expect to see her sitting in his wake.